Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm John Walls from the House Fiscal Staff. You should all have about a six-page spreadsheet in your packet. It looks like this. And I will start at the top of page one. Members in each different office of the agencies, the first couple lines in each section are the agency's base. Then under decision items, it shows any changes that the committee has made, either additions or subtractions, and then the new total or the new base going forward from what the committee has decided. Mr. Chair, I'll start at the top of page one. Under the Department of Transportation, in the area of aeronautics, the House bill is essentially the same as the governor's. The governor did have a recommendation for the current biennium of reducing state airports fund construction grants by $1.9 million. There was a shortage in the fund, and the $1.9 million reduction brings it into balance for the current biennium. The House did adopt that provision in the House bill. Moving down to Greater Minnesota Transit, Mr. Chair, the House bill adds $500,000 in each of the fiscal years for service protection. This is a one-time item. It is not added to the agency's base for the 08-09 biennium. Mr. Chair, under freight, there was no additions or subtractions in the area of freight, and they will just be going forward at their base level of funding. Under state roads, there was a slight increase in debt service, and there was a decrease in road construction. This was due primarily to the lack of reauthorization of the federal transportation bill and lack of federal funds flowing to the state. Therefore, MnDOT had to reduce the appropriation level anticipated to deal with the lack of funding. Mr. Chairman, in the infrastructure operation and maintenance area at the bottom of page one, there is a permanent addition of $8.625 million annually to their budget to deal with increases in maintenance costs going forward. Mr. Chair, at the top of page two, under electronic communications, there is an $875,000 annual increase to help the department deal with some ongoing needs for new equipment. Under local roads, we since the bill now has the same level of funding, at least for 06 and 07, for as current law for county state aids and municipal state aids, the House bill is at the same as the governor's level. Under general support, there is no change. We are the same as the governor. Under buildings, the department had requested $4 million annually be added to the agency's base for small project needs on an ongoing basis. The House bill gives them the $4 million for 06 and 07, but does not add it to their base on a permanent basis. And at the bottom of page two, you can see the totals for the Department of Transportation. Moving on to page three, at the top is Metropolitan Council Transit. The first two decision items, the base reduction general fund and the base addition, were things that had been set in statute 2 years ago with the biennial budget, and so this is not a change from current law. There is a one-time increase of $500,000 per year due to some transfers, which I will explain later. There is a base reduction from LRT of $500,000 a year. That is transferred from LRT operations to bus service for bus service preservation. There's also a one-time transfer of $600,000 of current surplus from the LRT system due to over-collections in anticipated fees from greater than expected ridership and lower than anticipated costs. Those are being raised in the 04-05 biennium, but those are captured by the House bill and used for bus service in the 06 and 07 biennium. Mr. Chair, there is a one-time usage of livable communities funds in 06 and 07 of $5 million a year. That money is directed towards transit. That is not, however, an appropriation, so you will see on the sheet the general fund appropriation is $5 million less than the total. The total was just to reflect what money they will be receiving, but only a portion of that is coming from the general fund, and that's why the general fund number is $5 million lower. Moving on to public safety. There was no change. We are at the governor's base level for administration and related services, as well as public safety support and technical support services. Moving on to State Patrol, there is again no change from the governor's or base level for patrolling highways, commercial vehicle enforcement, or capital security. In the middle of page 4, moving on to driver and vehicle services, the department had requested several fee increases, which I will go into a little later. Those were to be set up into a special revenue account, as well as the proceeds of some of their other collections, to a special revenue account that they requested be statutorily appropriated to them on an open and standing basis. The House did agree to those fee increases, however, made a direct appropriation and did not agree to those as an open and standing appropriation on an ongoing basis, but rather have the department come on a year-to-year or a biennial basis to ask for those appropriations and detail their budget to the committee. There's also a small appropriation for the Support Our Troops license plate provision, and these were fees paid for these special plates that would go for departmental costs. Mr. Chair, moving down to traffic safety and pipeline safety, there is no change from the governor's level. That is the base budget. There are standard boilerplate contingency fund appropriations at the top of page 5, and the general fund totals are shown in the shaded area at the top of page 5. There's a reconciliation of how the general fund balances against the target. There's some transfers in. Mr. Chair, those transfers in are, as I mentioned earlier, $600,000 that was an overage or unexpected money left over from the 2004-2005 LRT budget. Those were transferred to the general fund and then appropriated for transit purposes, as well as on a one-time basis. The fee increases from driver and vehicle services were supposed to raise about $9 million a year, and we transferred $1 million in 06 and 07 on a one-time basis to help provide some money for transit, but those dollars will revert back to Department of Public Safety in 08 and 09. On the starting at the bottom half of page 5 are a list of all the different fee increases, how much they raise, and what funds they go towards. SR stands for special revenue. Anything labeled DEP is money that is raised from a fee that either goes to deputy registrars or driver license agents and is not collected by the state. Also, Trunk Highway Fund and General Fund and Gift Fund as well are also listed, as well as the transfer from the Hiawatha LRT line. Mr. Chair, that brings us to page 6. The only new revenue provision for transportation that remains in the bill is the MVEST proposal. The governor had proposed transferring MVEST, phasing it in with a constitutional amendment from 08 until 2012, in which it would be fully implemented. The House chooses the same, to have a similar proposal with MVEST being phased in at the same rate. However, the governor proposed 60% to roads and 40% to transit. The House proposes 70% to highways and 30% to transit. And Mr. Chair, I can stand for any questions.
All right, thank you. I think we'll first go toward amendments, and then we'll go to questions on the bill. Members, the first amendment that should be in your packet is the A-67 amendment. Representative Holberg moves the A-67 amendment. I believe this is a technical amendment. Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, it is. Lines 3 through 6 deal with aligning the correct numbers. On the lines 7 and 8, delete some remnant language that we're not sure how were included in the bill in the first place. It had to do with driver's license training and permitting and using simulators, and it was an issue that wasn't discussed in committee and was never intended to be part of the bill.
Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor of the A67 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Holberg, maybe I can have you do another amendment here. Representative Holberg moves the A-64 amendment. Representative Holberg, can you speak to the A-64 amendment?
I can, Mr. Chair, and some of our special license plates have a sticker. Others are actually a full plate with a raised surface. And this, in the bill as it's in front of you, the Disabled Veterans of America plates use a sticker. The group that was supporting this came back and asked for the embossed plates and were willing to pay the additional surcharge to cover the additional costs.
Discussion to the A-64 amendment. See no discussion. All in favor of the A-64 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The A-64 amendment is adopted. Next, I'll turn to the A-63 amendment. Representative Abrams moves the A-63 amendment. Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is simply making this the Section 17, Article 5, Section 17, effective the day after enactment. It deals with license plates for cars of at least 10 years old with more than 500 manufacturers are imported into the United States. Together with a collector vehicle. The reason the effective date has to be moved up is because a couple of the collectors want it to be available for this season. I really don't see any controversy about it. And if I had known about this season versus next season, that's how it would have been an amendment that was offered in committee.
Discussion to the A-63 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I support the amendment.
Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A-63 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A-63 amendment is adopted. Next, members, let's take up the A-70 amendment. Representative Holberg, I think this is an amendment of yours. Representative Holberg moves the A-70 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This will begin to look at an issue that Representative Olson's very interested in and that other states have pursued, and that is commuter bus lines from outside, what in our case would be from outside the Seven County metro area, and the possibility of contracting with private providers in order to provide this service. This would ask MnDOT to look at that possibility. Other states have done it with some success because of a longer route and the ability to charge a higher rate.
Discussion to the A-70 amendment. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the A-70 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A-70 amendment is adopted. Next, members, the chair will move the A-55 amendment. Members, the A-55 amendment is another sort of study amendment. It basically sets up a committee of various interest groups to look at airport planning throughout the state. I guess it's my feeling, I think the feeling of others, that we need a more coordinated plan throughout the state in terms of our air service, and that there's not enough coordination between the Greater Minnesota airports and the MAC. Discussion to the amendment, Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing the amendment forward. I think this is a good piece of work. I know that Representative Thiessen has also worked on this, I believe, with you. I think this is something that is overdue in terms of taking a real broad look at our aviation needs and infrastructure needs in the future. So I'd urge adoption.
Yeah. Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I urge members to adopt the amendment as well. I think it's a good step in the right direction.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, before we rush off to do this, I want to speak to a couple of points here about this amendment. First of all, before everyone thinks that MnDOT Aeronautics has been asleep at the switch, they have not. There is a five-year aviation system plan that's pretty comprehensive that touches almost everything that's already being requested. That's being requested in this amendment is already being done. It is not done by a group that's quite as broad as the one that's described on page 3 here, but nonetheless does include aviation professionals who solicit input from folks like this on this group. The second issue is that within the last 3 years, there was a pretty extensive what we call Tier 2 airport study that included St. Cloud, Rochester, Duluth, and Eau Claire, and worked to coordinate the growth and the capacity at those airports with the demand increases in the larger Twin City area, and I'm not just talking 7-County Metro here, and how the whole region fit into the national aviation scheme. Mr. Chairman and members, I'm not going to speak against this. It could work. It's going to be duplicative, in my opinion. I would love to have heard this in the aviation subcommittee or transportation policy and talk it through and actually have the MnDOT representatives here and the Metropolitan Airports Commission representatives who actually spend enormous amounts of time, skill, and money already doing what this attempts to do. So having said that, I guess I'll hold my comments, and if it passes, great. If it doesn't, we'd be delighted to take this up in aviation subcommittee next year.
Members, I've been informed there's one technical amendment I need to incorporate. Page 2, line 1, should be section 63, and I'd incorporate that. Representative Flinzing.
Thank you. Representative Beard, as chair of the aviation subcommittee, could you comment on how the smaller airports would fit into this, say, in a place like Longville? Or one of those places, because they wouldn't be represented on this particular advisory council.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Flinzing, in looking through this, I don't see, I'm gratified that there's representatives from the business and from aviation community here, which is very important, but no, just the users, individual users who use it for personal or business reasons in their own, I don't see them represented. I don't see that the other we call tier three airports or smaller are going to be involved in this study. I think what the thrust of the chairman's bill is to look at air cargo and scheduled commercial service, if I'm not mistaken, which I think does not go nearly as far as the all-encompassing project that MnDOT Aeronautics already does, and the Met Council, I might add.
Other discussion to the amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A55 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A55 amendment is adopted. Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, I do have one oral amendment I'd like to offer for the committee's consideration.
Yes, sir.
If I may, on page, delete section 77, I think it's on page 149 of the bill, if I'm not mistaken, 145. And I'd like to speak to it when everybody gets there.
Okay, page 145. Representative Beard moves page 145, delete section 77. Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if it floats or flies or rolls around, I guess I pay attention to it and have either done it or flown it or something like that. But this caught my attention for a couple of reasons. One is, again, the MnDOT, the Department of Transportation, has a very specific process that's in place. It's covered, I believe, in Section 219, Statute Number 219.383. I know in the city of Shakopee, when I was a city council member there, we went through this process with the Union Pacific and the head-end train speeds through the heart of our downtown on the Omaha Main Line. That was a pretty big deal. And the process worked, I'm here to tell you. And it worked because professionals that understand the dynamics of train handling and train movements, along with crossings and safety considerations, track geometry, and everything else that goes into this. This is a more complicated than it would look like at first glance, but they worked out something reasonable that allowed interstate commerce to continue to be permitted in an efficient and safe manner and protected the public safety interests of the citizens, at least in my town. And I know that OR can do the same process. My concern, members, is that if we put this into the bill, we're going to open floodgates for every community that's crabby at their railroad that has a bad crossing or doesn't like horns being blown or something to come running down here and ask us to carry this special legislation. Again, we've hired professionals to do this that know their business, and I would encourage us to delete this section of the law and have the City of OR call up the Railroad Division at MnDOT and start the process there where it should be.
Discussion to the Beard Oral Amendment. Representative Rook Pavina.
Mr. Chair, members, this isn't about horns or noise. This is about trains coming from Canada with a lot of hazardous material. and I'm going to, someone went on to get Representative Bill to speak to this, but they had a derailment, and the school is right along the railroad tracks, their high school, K-12 school. There were cars laying within, from me to Representative Smith and Bradley Osman, from a, I think it's a, must be about a, I don't know how big of a propane tank, where they unload the Canadian National. These trains, President Beard, there's at least two trains an hour. This is a dangerous situation in Orr, Minnesota. So, just so the members know, whether you like this piece or not, this is not horns, train whistles blowing and noise. This is a real, real catastrophe that could happen. And I see Representative Dill is here, so, Mr. Chair, if you'd give him the, if you would give him the courtesy to speak to this, perhaps he could enlighten you as to why he put it in the bill.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will in a minute, Representative Riccobino, but I should have probably gone first to the author of the bill, whose bill this provision is in. Representative Holberg, do you support the Beard-Oral Amendment?
Mr. Chair, and we saw the videotape of the situation in Orr and heard testimony. It appears to be a dangerous situation. At the time the provision was put in the bill, I wasn't aware of this alternative process. I think that the situation is different, although I am hesitant of setting a precedent of going this way. I think Representative Dill is here, if maybe you want to listen to him for a minute or two. But it is a hazardous situation, and I wish that he would have been here after having gone through the regular process with MnDOT. It made it a little bit easier.
Representative Dill, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Chair Knobloch. This is not the MnDOT process. It is about a crossing. Says specifically in the regulation, it talks about a crossing. I just ran up all these stairs to get here, so.
Oh. I wish I could
be
healthy.
Thank you, Representative Riccobino. I need support. Anyway, there have been two derailments of the train in and around Orr, in the city limits and at the edge of the city limits, and the derailments had absolutely nothing to do, thank you, above, nothing to do with the intersection, with the crossing. Just a few weeks ago, April 14th, 2 days after we had the bill in Representative Earhart's committee, the same train system had a massive derailment just south of Duluth. It had a huge fire, and it was just catastrophic in that area. The school is 150 yards or less from the track. The playground is within 25 yards of the track. And in committee, we showed a video of the kids on the playground and the train going through the background at roughly 60 miles an hour. The first derailment that happened in the city of Orr, the train derailed off the track. And I don't know if you're familiar, most of you in small towns have seen those huge 30,000-gallon propane cylinders that sit alongside of a railroad track and that a train car unloads into. Those huge vessels. A train car potash from Alberta derailed off the track and hit the propane cylinder and put about a five to six foot gash in the side of it, right in our, at the edge of the community, and it bounced off. This is like an accident beyond waiting for a place to happen. And these were all done at 49 miles an hour, because at that time the track was a 49 mile an hour track. Since then they've upgraded the track, they've raised the speed to 60 miles an hour, and they've had two derailments since they did that in the community or near it, very near it. The regulation for the federal regulation that authorizes the state in the case of a local safety hazard is very clear. The state has the authority in the instance of a local safety hazard to regulate the train. And that's our basis of claim. We have worked with MnDOT for over a decade trying to find a solution to all of these problems. We've solved some of the problems at the crossing, but this problem just continues to get worse. The fact is, members, chairman, that every, from Cabotogama to just north of Cook, from Crane Lake to Boys Fort Reservation, every single child from kindergarten through grade 12 is in the same building that the train is next to during over 200 days a year. And if that train derails and the chlorine comes off the track and all of these ifs happen, we're going to have a lot of problems. We're probably going to have a serious accident. Further, on any given Friday night during football season, the football field is within 25 yards of the track, the one end zone. So if we play Cook, we've got both towns at the football game because everybody comes to the game. And, I mean, I just can't imagine that anyone that would witness this, and Representative Newman, I don't think he's on this committee, stood up and said, and I quote, as the railroad came down to talk about this problem, Representative Newman said, I know Orr, and whatever the railroad's going to say, they're wrong. And they hadn't even testified. So I'll answer questions. I would not favor this amendment. We have tried to move the rail out of town for over 12 years.
Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Wait. Mr. Chairman?
Opposed?
No!
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Chairman, I feel a little of umbrage right there because I had my hand up. I was going to talk about what happened in my committee. We're talking about MnDOT coming in and talking about this and some other things. Now, this is a very emotional appeal, and I understand his consternation about not being able, but he didn't go through the process. And there is a process for mitigating his situation. But I'm going to let it go now.
Okay. I appreciate that, Representative Abrams. Representative Earhart. I you're getting more trouble. I'm sorry, Representative Earhart. I had not seen that you had your hand up.
I had my hand up.
I wasn't also looking over there either. I should have been looking around a little bit more. Representative Bradley, I see the A59 amendment. Representative Bradley moves the A59 amendment.
Sure, I do move it, and this is not something that I relish doing. We have gone through, this is a constituent who has a business right alongside Highway 52 on the northern part of the community, where if you've been through, there's some great work going on. Among the great work is a town wall. The sawn wall takes away the sight line for the business. His business has already been greatly impacted. The reason I bring it this evening is that we have gone through the entire process and been denied. I mean, so I will tell you that it has gone through, and you'll have to make your own judgment. I didn't bring the pictures along, but I think that there is merit in the request. Typically, I don't like doing this kind of thing because I try to respect the process, but I think this particular constituent has a good case, and that's why I bring it to the committee tonight.
Discussion to the Bradley Amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbert.
If I might, we have kind of a fine saga that happened in Tax Committee, and Section 78 and 79 of the bill on pages 145 and 146 were amendments that were put in taxes after we had an amendment that would give signs to the Northwestern Chiropractic College. And then in my second visit to taxes, they deleted the Northwestern Chiropractic College signs. These two signs are in the bill. We have Representative Bradley coming with another sign proposal. Again, there is a process through MnDOT, and I'm assuming that we've got two in here. We've got another one for amendment. MnDOT opposes all of them, and my understanding is that the Lieutenant Governor did meet with Representative Bradley's constituent this week. I don't know what the end result of that meeting was, but I would caution members that there's only so much room on a road and only so much ability of drivers to take in so much information as they're traveling down the road as well.
Representative Abrams?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to vote against the Bradley Amendment, and in order to be fair to my friend Representative Bradley, I will then make the oral amendment to take out Section 78 and 79 for the bill so that everybody's being treated the same.
Okay, I assume, Representative Abrams, that that's a motion you're planning on offering after we've done whatever we're going to do with the Bradley motion?
That's correct.
Okay. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say that I will also be opposing the Bradley motion, and it will also then support Representative Abrams' motion. This is an issue of great controversy in the area of transportation, and tying MnDOT's hands in this way. Actually, the College of Chiropractic Amendment, even originally this session, was my amendment that failed in transportation finance, given the testimony of the Department of Transportation. And quite honestly, they gave a number of good points about why it wasn't good policy. And so I think we need to really look to them in this area, and I would oppose it.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I told you at the beginning I come before the committee with this with some reservations, and I needed at least to hear the initial reactions. And I'm not about to try to break. I can kind of sense the mood, and I'll withdraw my amendment.
Representative Bradley withdraws the A-59 amendment. Representative Abrams.
I will move to delete Sections 78 and 79 from the bill. I think we understand the reasons why. If you're looking for any partisanship, one's a Republican amendment, one's a DFL amendment, and this will give Representative Holberg, I think, stronger legs on the floor to resist sign amendments. Otherwise, we're going to take a six-hour bill and turn it into a 12-hour bill, and we'll even have a sign directing us off of Highway 100 how to get to Representative Earhart's house.
Representative Abrams moves to delete Section 78 and 79. Representative Holberg.
I would support that motion, Mr. Chair.
Discussion to the Abrams oral amendment. This is to delete the Section 78 and 79. Representative Rucavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, it kind of reminds me of this whole thing about we got to let the bureaucrats at the departments take care of us. And it kind of reminds me of a story when Representative Solberg and I and Representative Anderson and former Representative Begich met in the Rest of Range delegation right downstairs here in room 200. A few years ago, maybe it was 1990 or 91. And the Burlington...
300 South.
And the Burlington Northern was going to... Representative Bradley, the Burlington Northern was going to stop service and lift the rail out of National Field. And Representative Solberg wanted a meeting with the Department of Transportation Railroad folks. And they came there and... they listened, and they nodded their head, and they handed out colored maps. And Representative Begich told all of us, well, they listened, but as soon as you see they got a colored map, you know damn well they've made the decision. If it was black and white, they'd still be thinking about it. And you know what's going to happen? They're going to nod their heads, and they're going to tell us they're going to support us, but we all got to go to tax committee. Remember? And when we walk out of this room, they're going to snicker and laugh at us. And they're going to wait till we're out of session, and then we're going to screw us.
Well, they tried to do just that. And once in a while, members, when you can't get their attention, you have to offer amendments. And that's what Representative Broad did, and that's what Representative
Mallory,
but I can't remember who put the amendment on that you wanted, Representative Larson.
Well, Representative Davis, thank you.
Okay, that's who it was. I'll yield to you for a second.
Yeah.
But can I finish my baggage story?
Now, Representative Rucavina, I think when you go see former Representative Begich this weekend, you got to tell him there's a way to access these tapes now, and you got to let him listen to you, because I think he gave a pretty good imitation.
Well, but Mr. Chair, he was right about the colored maps, and I think, Representative Bradley, I wish you wouldn't have folded, because I was going to support you on this one, and because I know how important it is to you, and there's absolutely no reason why once in a while we can't not have them snicker at us and wait till we leave St. Paul. So, I'm opposing the amendment.
Other discussion to the Abrams oral amendment? Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was born and raised in Henderson, Minnesota.
Boy, Chair.
Okay. So, we have tried in that small town of 800 people to get a sign that directs people to that community, simply because of the fact that it's very similar to the city of Red Wing, Minnesota. And what they're doing is, this small community is about 35, 38 miles south of Chanhassen. And the metropolitan area is going to come down the Minnesota River, down the Minnesota River in the next 15 years. And what they're trying to do is to refurbish the town and restore all of the historical elements of that community. And they're doing it all on their own. Now, it is an important thing that people know that Henderson is on Highway 19 going west of Highway 169, north of Le Sueur, Minnesota, and south of Belle Plaine on Highway 169. And that small town has very little influence in the legislature. I'm not saying that that represents Henderson, but it's a small town. They're good people, and all they're asking for, to be honest with you, not to put up new, to change the sign from the word Gaylord to Henderson. That's all they're asking, and they can't even get it done. They've been asking for 4 years that they've been, and before they changed the intersection. Now they got the intersection changed, and there's more people, and they're trying to build, as I said, a historical event in that community. And I just can't understand. I talked with the representative in regard to that situation, and it has not been successful. So I think it's worth some credibility on moving the Department of Transportation and the state to have them put up a meaningful sign, and rather than putting up a sign that nobody's going to go to the community. So I'd hope we can delete the amendment of Section 79 that says we'll delete that. I'd hope that would stay in the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holberg.
If I might, I've got a note from MnDOT, Representative Broad's in the room, but the MnDOT states that Henderson has two signs, but they just aren't big enough.
What? Who's not big enough? Henderson or the sign?
The sign.
Oh.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair, and I guess I'm not sure who to ask the question. Are we dealing with the MnDOT Variance Committee? Is that who we're having trouble with? Because I've had experience with them myself. And because of that,
we are.
I'm not going to tell a story, but I'm sympathetic.
Please don't tell a story. No.
But I'm very sympathetic to Representative Bradley and to Representative Dempsey. And for that reason, I guess I'm opposing the Abrams Amendment, because I think that it's hard work. And to just give it away, throw it away, I'd like to see the Bradley situation taken care of, too. But it took us 10 years to get the sign that I'm going to have up in my district this summer.
Chair.
Okay, I've got Representative Vandeveer, Kelleher, and Smith, and then Rick Avina.
To this point,
Mr. Chair, I'll be really...
Representative Vandeveer.
Mr. Chair, I'll be really brief. I'm a little hesitant to say this case we started after license plates, but I do think that signs and roads are for people, and if a rep wants a sign, I'm inclined not to disagree, but then again, Representative Holberg is sitting here with opposed to this, so it's kind of a dilemma, so maybe we should just vote.
Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, I just got concerned when Representative Dempsey said we're going to eliminate Gaylord off the sign. I don't want to eliminate Gaylord. I drive the stretch of road a lot, and I hope that we're just adding Henderson with Gaylord, but I think that could be slightly controversial as well if we're eliminating another town and putting...
Representative Hobart. It's probably a good illustration of why we shouldn't make sign policy in a Ways and Means Committee. There are federal guidelines as to the number of signs and how they can be placed on a roadway, et cetera, that MnDOT has to conform to. If you think we're having fun here tonight, we could have 130 different sign amendments.
Yeah. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Bradley started this, and I just want to chime in with my two cents worth. I oppose the amendment. I think the language should be left in there. I agree with Representative Dempsey and Representative Rukavina. I realize that God must love bureaucrats, because he made so doggone many of them. But I think one of the reasons we're elected is to tell them when they're wrong. So I am for leaving the language in.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, last fall, right after the election, I went and visited some of my Republican friends, and I was going through Cannon Falls area, and then I was going down this little windy hill and come down, and I saw this Henderson, and the sign was so small I thought it was a Norwegian's mailbox. So I think that Representative Dempsey's right, and I'm supporting Dempsey on this one.
Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the Abrams oral amendment deleting the two sections on signs, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
No.
Oh. Division.
Oh.
Yeah.
Come on.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. All right. Someone called it. All in favor, raise your hands. Okay, raise your hands.
One.
Opposed, raise your hands. All right, there being 14 ayes and 18 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Anyone else have any amendments?
Please, go on.
Representative Earhart has an amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that very soon now, possibly Saturday night or early Sunday morning, whatever the speaker decides, we'll be taking up the transportation bill. And so, therefore, I wanted to get a couple licks in before we got to, I have to go to church on Sunday morning, and so maybe I can't be here. But in any event, there are two amendments that are hand in glove here. And what I would like to work off of is this sheet that has the figures on it. There are a couple of fundamental blocks to building a good transportation plan. One is the gas tax, and one is the tab fee. They both go into the, you should listen to this, Representative Ruth, because the folks down along Highway 14 are counting on you. And the current law is in the first column. The original Holberg Amendment is in the second column. The third column, 2481, is part of a package. And the last one is a amendment that was introduced by Representative Lanning. The two amendments that you have before you are House File 2481, Amendment 2, and Holberg Amendment 2461844, Amendment 2. Now, this is the depreciation schedule and the money raised by the two different plans. In the Earhart Amendment, the depreciation schedule is 100% the first year, 80% the second year, and so on down the line. There is no, the next column is down below. No, the maximum tax is is the 1.25% times the value of the car, and it ends up in 10 years, or in the 11th year, at $35. It raises over 10 years. $5,657. $5,657,000,000. The Holberg Amendment, the second one, the one that Lanning did, the depreciation schedule runs the same way, but there's a maximum after the first 2 years, which is $189. So if you're 1.25 times the remaining value of your car after 1 year, 2 years, 3 years is greater than 189, you still only pay 189. This raises $5,545,000,000 over the 10-year period. Now, the difference in these two plans, and you're going to see one of them again before very long, is that in the Earhart Amendment, the maximum makes the first 5 years higher than the first 5 years of the Holberg-Lanning Amendment. In the second 5 years, the Earhart Amendment is less, and the Holberg Amendment, Lanning Amendment, is more. Now, that's a very small part of what's going on in the transportation packages that are going to be offered, and I thought you ought to be aware of at least one of the possibilities for creating something more than a nickel for every road in the state, or maybe a bonding bill that translates into next to nothing. So I just wanted to be aware about that. I'll take any questions you may have.
Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson. Or Rukavina. I misheard. Representative Rukavina. Those from the same general place.
Yeah, we all look alike. Ask Earhart. Anyway, Representative Earhart, does it go to mass transit and highway funding, or is it all highway funding, or how do you distribute
the funds? It goes into the highway user fund.
Which is, help me out.
Well, that's the one that has the three breakdowns in there. It goes to, by Constitution, it's dedicated by Constitution. 95% of that goes in the following distribution. Trunk highway, 62%, county state aid, 29%, municipal state aid by 9%.
So it's similar, almost similar to the gas tax.
It is the same thing. Everything that goes into that highway user fund is distributed in the same manner.
Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, I sort of dread asking this question, seeing that we've produced so many amendments on this side tonight, so I'll just say that first. Representative Earhart, are you offering one of these amendments tonight, or are we...
Well, I think I told the chairman of the committee that I wouldn't offer it, but I would like to have an informational offering, and so I'm not going to offer them tonight, but you will see these again.
And Representative Earhart, I appreciate that. I know people have had a long week, and appreciate the chance to learn about them, but not go through a long formal debate. Representative Seifert.
I was going to ask the same question if it's an educational morsel.
Okay, Representative Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Earhart, I'm glad that you did pass this out so we can have this discussion, and appreciate your support of this. I also think that Representative Holberg should be commended for the work that we did in the Transportation Finance Committee. This was the first, you have current law, but the second column there from House File 2461 is what Representative Holberg offered in the Omnibus Transportation Bill. It is a significant piece of any solution that we do in terms of meeting our needs in transportation. A lot of us believe that can't be the entire package. It doesn't do enough to meet the needs, but it has to be a piece of the pie. And I think that all of us would agree that we have needs in this state, and but I think it's important that that members who have supported this, and I think a large percentage of the people on the Transportation Finance Committee support this change, and so thanks for the hearing. Thanks, Representative Holberg, for coming forward with this as well, and I look forward to the future debate on this.
Representative Pimar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just a real quick amendment here. I would move to delete Section 31 from the bill. And this is sort of a perennial issue that... This is sort of a perennial issue that keeps coming before...
Excuse me, Representative Kmart, I'm not hearing the last part. What is your amendment?
It's to delete Section 31 from the bill.
In fact,
the
freeway.
Article 108.
Article 5.
108.
31.
Article 5.
Okay.
Everybody knows the argument. Just real briefly, members, I hope you'll support this because... you know, we do this every 2 years. It's futile, A. And B, the MnDOT and the Federal Highway Administration and the City of St. Paul and the neighborhood groups that oppose the construction of I-35 came to an agreement in court, and the agreement was that there was to be no trucks on that part of the road, and that the speed limit was to be at 45 in perpetuity. And so I know this must be Representative Wilkins' bill. He does this every 2 years, and we have the same fight, but it's going to cost the state money if we don't take this out of here and this ends up in court again. There may be another environmental impact statement that will be required. We'll have court fees. And for all you who live south of here, you get a little faster. You're not going to get to your home any quicker, 55 miles an hour. And if it's 45 miles an hour now, people are not driving 45
right.
miles an hour. They're driving
right.
55. If you put it at 55, they're going to go 65.
That's kind of the difference.
There was. This was an agreement. I'd ask members to support me on this. Let's take this out. We don't have to deal with it on the floor.
That's the most compelling reason.
Well, the nature of the agreement then was
what is it,
and our city.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, members, this will be the eighth time since I've been here that we're dealing with this issue, Representative Pamar, and it really is futile. And I just really want to emphasize, you know, that stretch would not have been built, or if it would have been built, it... would have taken longer and it would have taken us more money if we didn't all get together and agree. And there are a few members who are still here in the legislature that were around then. We all signed off on this, folks. And so I would just say, you know, let's just honor that agreement, let things be. It's a small stretch of I-35. It's not... it's only a couple of miles, several miles. And, you know, the communities that this highway plowed through paid a pretty big price for this. I've got neighbors on my side of the district. There's like three or four districts that border that piece where they lost their backyards to, you know, to the right-of-ways. I mean, literally. And, you know, it's a small concession to those folks to be able to keep that speed limit down, and you know, we can get on to some more important issues as opposed to rehashing this. So I would hope you'd all do this.
Well, you know, Representative Pimar Mariani, it seems to me that this is the Republican re-election effort for you, because every single year they bring this up, and every single year you can talk about beating it back. I mean, Representative Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representatives Pimar and Mariani that the correct policy is to keep it at 45, but especially for the reason that Representative Pamar gave us, that folks drive faster than that anyway. And as it relates to that, I wanted to tip off Representative Siefert to something. because I think one of your campaign volunteers, I drive 35E on a daily basis, and on a regular basis, a little blue truck with a Seifert for house speeding by me. I just don't want that constituent of yours to give you a bad name, Seifert.
Representative McNamara. Or, I'm sorry, Representative Holberg.
Just for clarification purposes, this language would not allow trucks back on. It would only change the speed limit, so I think that point needs to be clarified. Because trucks would still be allowed.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if Representative Holberg can answer a couple of questions if she knows. Do you know the design speed of this section of the freeway?
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, I do not, although just from driving it, maybe faster than 45 miles an hour, it seems to handle it.
Okay, and then one more.
Representative McNamara.
One more question, Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Holberg, was the history, do you remember, was not this road originally under construction to be built as a regular design highway and was actually stopped after construction had already started? And I'm trying to remember, wasn't there actually, it was a regular design 55 mile an hour highway and it was stopped after it was already approved? Is that true?
Representative McNamara, it's far before my time that I even knew that the road existed.
Representative Mariani to this point.
Well, on this point, and I'll double check, Representative McNamara, but I think that's partly true.
Sure.
The reason why those who opposed that stretch had leverage is because VNDOT basically violated some environmental review standards that they should have been following. So they kind of, you know, had the high ground there. And, you know, this goes back to a time when, you know, Representative Rukavina shared earlier about, you know, the mystical power of this department. I had my own signed story, too, Representative Rukavina. We did the right thing, and we put it in statute to get the sign from Metro State. But this was back when they would do this stuff. I mean, they did this to the Rondo community in St. Paul, took out that historic African-American community with absolutely no input, none, from the citizens who lost their homes in that area. And so I think MnDOT's in a more enlightened stage nowadays vis-a-vis other communities. But I could double-check on that, but I believe that part of the reason they had leverage for Pacific McNamara is because they basically caught MnDOT moving faster than they should have on this.
Representative Flinzing and Wagenius. Representative Flinzing.
Representative Mariani, it's been suggested that this area, or 35E in this corridor, might be a good transit corridor. I wonder, given the speed restrictions and the truck restrictions, if bus expressways and other transit modes would also be restricted based on the sentiments of the residents' backyards and the speed of this area. Mr. Chair?
Representative Robert.
If I might, it's about 7:15 the other morning. A bus with four people on it went by me on the shoulder or the next to me heading into St. Paul.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Representative Holberg. How much, I mean, I'm looking at the time tonight. I'm wondering on the floor on Tuesday when this bill comes up, how much time do you want to spend on this particular 35E?
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, given the amount of fun that I had in taxes and tonight, I mean, I'm just, like I've said before, my attitude's on Valium regarding this bill. I'm along for the ride. So this is going to be a long one.
It's a long ride.
It will
Representative
be.
Tamar.
Remember, I didn't last time I came up, but the time before that I had 20 amendments that increased the speed limit of various numbers in south of St. Paul, and I'm prepared to do that again, but I really hope that the committee would decide to just get rid of this and
my Representative Mariani, did you have another point? I'm sorry, I thought I'd seen your hand raised again.
No. Let's get rid of this issue, Mr. Chair. We can deal with other issues under
the
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to point out consistency, we decided we were going to set train speeds tonight.
we're going to set signs by local standards, I think that to be consistent, we should support the amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
He's with you.
Oh. All right.
Ready to vote? Everyone ready to vote?
Ready to vote.
Ready to vote. Fully informed.
Are we having any further discussion? Any other discussion? All in favor of the Paymar oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Really?
The motion prevails. The Paymar amendment is adopted.
The moon is blue.
Are there other amendments? Any discussion to the bill? Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we moved into the Paymar amendment pretty quickly, and I wanted to respond when Representative Earhart put his two potential proposals on the table. Because I was glad that he did. I had a conversation the other day with the author of the bill in the elevator, and she was just coming out from having passed the bill out of the tax committee, and I asked her what was in the bill, and she said something like, not much, or very little, or whatever. She's nodding yes, something similar to that. So at any rate, I had a chance since then to acquire some information about what our transportation needs are. And I think all of us know that throughout the fall, when most of us were campaigning, and since then, every time I attend a chamber meeting, a community meeting, transportation and transportation needs regularly come up. And thought I would just share a few numbers. And I mentioned to you as we were coming in, Mr. Chairman, I said I'd keep my comments short. I would cut them in half, I think, is what I agreed to do. But I just want to make a few points. The state trunk highway system, and I'm talking about our unfunded transportation needs. If we look at the projections between now or 2008 and 2030, we're going to need about $38.1 billion. And current revenue projections are $14.5 billion. That's a shortfall of about $1 billion per year in terms of what our highway needs are going to be. If we talk about transit in the metropolitan area by 2020, we're going to need about $300 million per year. And if we look at greater Minnesota, I'm told by MDOT, the information I have from MDOT, that it's $60 million per year. Local roads and bridges, huge amounts there are needed. Our ports, freight, rail, several million there. We need, and I'm responding now to the Earhart Amendment, we need about $1.7 billion per year by 2030 if we're going to keep our transportation system up to snuff to meet the needs, the population increases, and so on that we're going to have. The Earhart Amendment that he floated out there over the next 10 years put a significant number of dollars out there. I don't know if he's still there. Yes, I guess he is. But I think it's important to understand that even that doesn't get us where we need to be. Now, I personally don't have any amendments here tonight, and I personally think we need to keep the bill moving. We know that it'll be in rules because of the constitutional amendment tomorrow. Some of us happen to be on the Rules Committee. So we'll be visiting the bill again then. And then, of course, on the House floor. But my point is that I think we're going to have to sometime in the next couple of steps begin to meaningfully address our transportation needs. If we finish the legislative session without doing that, I think the general public is going to be disappointed because I think, you know, beyond our normal appropriations, when we look at what happened last time, two things that I heard a lot about. when there was a feeling that there was a lack of accomplishment during the last biennium. It was the bonding bill and transportation. Those were the two issues that people commented most frequently about when you would ask them what needed to be done or what their feelings were relative to that session. Well, obviously now we've dealt with the bonding bill. I think most of us were quite pleased with the outcome there. But we still have the transportation issue that we're really going to need to address in a meaningful way. And so, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there with just saying I hope that in the next couple of steps that we do put something out there that will address our transportation needs. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At popular request, I would like to reoffer Amendment A59. But my cheerleader is not here, but I'll take my chances.
Representative Bradley moves the A59 amendment. Discussion to the A59 amendment. Representative Ruth.
But, Mr. Chair, I think it's only fair, since we're on a sign roll and everybody else got there, so definitely I think we should vote for Representative Bradley's sign.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't do this lightly because I don't take things, but I would tell members the reason for the timing is this has gone through the full escalation process, every one of the steps, including a unique meeting just last week. The results have been denials. I respect generalist processes, but I mean, I could show you pictures. I think the intuitive, any person looking at the situation for that business would conclude that this is a huge disadvantage. Just sound walls cutting them off from sight. And it's had already a significant impact on the business. So I would rather that we discuss it and do it here. I don't want to start a kind of an onslaught. I don't want to wait till the House floor. So, and I apologize to Representative Holmberg because I tried to respect. I think I heard from members that if you have a reasonable case, now's the time to do it. So I'd appreciate your support.
Deja vu all over again. other discussion to the Bradley Amendment. Representative Beard.
Here's the gist, because we'll be doing it with railroads for the next 3 or 4 years.
Good. Other discussion? Seeing no further discussion. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Earhart.
I have another question, Mr. Chairman. When you get through with this vote, I didn't know that he was going to.
Okay. All in favor of the Bradley A59 Amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A59 amendment is adopted. Back to discussion to the bill. Representative Earhart.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for the author. Representative Holberg, are you planning on adding anything or subtracting anything in the Rules Committee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, I am not.
So you expect...
That's my experience with this particular bill. Virtually every one of these issues are going to be discussed on the House floor, and it really seems like a big waste of time to spend a lot of time on this stuff in each committee, and they can have fun, and they can do what they want, and it doesn't really make any difference because it's all going to be brought up on the House floor again.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you should go as far as to say that. I saw one motion that was... I want an amendment that was going to delete Lakeville, and I don't think you want that to happen.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Holbert.
Lakeville may be better off being deleted from the state.
Representative Klinzing. Representative Vanderveer. Oh, sorry. Other discussion of the bill. Representative Holbert.
I'm honest by the representatives of Met Council that would have been an MVTA bus. On 35E with 4 passengers at 7 a.m. on a weekday.
All right, the record is noted. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Holberg renews her motion that House File 2461, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed. And members, we're going to now move to the next bill, but I'm going to turn the chair over to Representative Gunther.
Is that
Should we get this place back in the room? Let's call this meeting back to order. We're going to change the order a little bit because some members have to get the taxes in a hurry, so we're going to have Representative Larson. Are you going to move House File 310 for us?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Representative Bernardi. He's coming up for taxes. Okay, well, wait a minute.
Mr. Chair, she tells me it's a really good bill, and I've looked at it carefully, and I think we ought to just vote that rascal right out of here. Well, I'd be happy to try to avoid any questions that you may have.
Any questions?
No.
Aye. Mr. Chair?
Representative Holbrook.
If I might, maybe I'm going to keep this brief. I'm just going to make a couple points, and this, of course, is a process whereby interest in property would be transferred to Medtronic, which is a good thing for the state. But the policy I have a lot of concern with. The million-dollar payment will not begin to cover the cost of the land. Federal funds were paid for that property. We have a letter from the feds saying that they will require full market value for that portion of the property that they helped pay for. We are setting a precedent here where we are going to use trunk highway assets to support economic development, and in turn won't get the fair value in remuneration for the property, and we'll have to pay back the Fed. So from our perspective as far as setting policy, and as chair of the Transportation Finance Committee, I think it's a very dangerous road to go down, not that we don't do it frequently at the legislature, but I have been informed by MnDOT that they already have had requests for remnant land for additional plans like this, and also for affordable housing investments, and so we open the store, be expecting that we will continue to have requests for lands to be donated from the assets to the Trunk Highway Fund for various purposes.
Thank you, Representative Dorman. Representative Bernardi, your bill has been moved.
Thank you, Mr.
We started testimony. We listened to Representative Holbrook give her opinion. Now, Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Bernardi bill, you know, I appreciate everything that Representative Holbrook has said, but it's really critical to our state's future. There's a couple thousand jobs on the line, good-paying, high-quality jobs out there. Medtronic has been a tremendous asset for our state for a number of years. And, you know, this came up a little bit during the bonding bill, and we talked about it. And, you know, we wanted to do whatever we could to help Medtronic. Average salary on the jobs out there, in fact, I'm probably going to apply for one after reading this, $70,200 plus benefits. And so earlier, I know in taxes, we had the big discussion over what percentage of the federal poverty guideline that is. I think that's about 8,272% of it. And we're projecting that there will be at least 2,000 new jobs created by this, which is probably by 2012 when they get this whole thing in operation out there, which is a 31% increase in the number of jobs that they have now. The economic activity that will be created in this section of land is roughly about $250 million. So it's not going to be a stimulant just to creating those good, high-quality jobs at Medtronic, which are, you know, for a tire dealer from Albert Lea, are important to me. I mean, I want every job created in Albert Lea, if not Fairmont, but for sure we want them created in Minnesota. So if we can't get them in Albert Lea or Fairmont, we want to keep them and grow them in Minnesota. And so with that, Mr. Chair, members, I'll take any questions and deflect them now to Representative Bernardi.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I think Representative Holbrook used the word admonished. I think earlier, I think I just went by Representative Kelleher, and that's fine.
You were called on. Mr. Chair, may I suggest that the author of the bill, Representative Bernardi, actually get to present her bill at this point?
Very well. Representative Bernardi, please present your bill. I think you can fill in the gaps.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dorman did a fine job, and I really appreciate that. This is one of the most important economic development packages that I remember in recent history, and it's exactly the kind of jobs that we want to create and keep in Minnesota. The part I won't go into depth about the entire project. The part we have before us today is the part relating to the reverter class. So to keep it brief, we'll just I have a colored map that we are sending around, and when you get that, if you look in the orange area, that is the piece of land that we're talking about. This piece of land, to give you a little, it's in Moundsview. It borders the city of Blaine. It is approximately 40.4 acres, and a third of it is wetlands. The wetlands are located in the middle of the property, which makes it very difficult to develop. There is no access to this piece of property. It's landlocked. There is no infrastructure to the site. There's no gas, electricity, water, or sewer. And to give you a little bit of information, we have had a certified appraisal on this land that is a MnDOT approved appraiser, and they appraised the land just around $280,000. Now, there is a comp piece of land that you could look at right across Interstate 35W, which is Shoreview. And that piece of land in 2000 was sold from, Shoreview bought it from MnDOT for around $16,000 to $18,000 an acre, which equates to around $650,000 to around $800,000. Now, the difference in the piece of land is that was a buildable piece of land. There was access and roads to it, and it did not have the wetlands. You could build on that piece of property. So this gives you kind of the lay of the land as far as Medtronic. They are they want to get off the ground this summer. They're very eager to get this through. It's through the Senate, and it's been waiting there for quite some time now. I would appreciate your support in getting this through, and happy to answer any questions. We do have our folks from Medtronic here and Moundsview here if you have any questions.
I think Representative Beard has a question.
I did. Mr. Chair and Representative Bernardi, back to Chair Holberg's comments about MnDOT being at risk if the Federal Highway Department finds that the property is worth more than $1 million. They're going to want fair market value for that. Did what I just hear from you insist that this is not worth more than $1 million, that our Highway User Trust Fund is not at risk here or has minimal risk?
Well,
Representative Bernard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Beard. We have some more information to share with you, too, regarding that. The MnDOT piece of property that we're talking about, 64% of that was purchased with federal dollars. And that we do have we've had some research done at the federal level, and we have found out that the Federal Highway Administration, if they determine that it overall public interest for economic purposes, the federal government does not require any payment for the property. It would just automatically go over without a charge. And so we are asking for that exemption.
Representative Beer.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair and members, this is an excellent proposal in my humble opinion. The only concern I had is that those of us that are involved in transportation are constantly fighting what we call leakage in the Highway User Trust Fund bucket. And if indeed the federal government was going to come back on us, we would end up taking highway user money and putting it into what amounted to economic development. My only concern here was that if we're going to do that, that we structure the deal somehow so the money comes from the appropriate accounts and we protect the highway user fund. But it seems that the research Representative Bernardi is presenting assures us that the risk is small that will happen. Is that what I'm gathering?
Yes, the information we have now with the MnDOT approved appraiser at $280,000, 64% of that, and I don't have the math in my head, would be somewhere around, I don't know, $150,000, $180,000. That's just a really rough guess.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm just really curious about this. Did I hear you say that this land is not buildable?
Representative Bernardi.
This piece of parcel in the orange spot by itself is not a piece of land that's ideal for building. It's got the wetlands in the middle, mm-hmm. and so it would be very difficult to build a Medtronic project right on top of that. The Medtronic project, a lot of the building site is going to be going in the yellow area.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Sikora.
What they're going to do is this will just be some land that they own, and they'll maybe use it for parking or something like that. And at least this gives them access because they own the rest of the land. Is that the idea?
As I understand it, that this piece of land is part of the whole development. I think it's a lot for aesthetics. They hope to keep as much wetlands as possible. Well, they do have to keep the wetlands and keep it as natural as possible. That's the plans right now. I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn. Yeah. If you would like our Medtronic guru who builds facilities all over the world, he could answer that question for you.
Mr. Guru, welcome to our committee. Please give your name for the record.
And I can call him that. He happens to be a constituent of mine and a friend of mine. Our kids are in the same grade together at Fridley Schools, and this is Don Hagman.
You're still welcome.
Yeah.
Please give your name for the
record. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Don Hagman. I am a director of real estate and construction for Medtronic. I worked my career at Medtronic. We have about 250 facilities around the world, actually 275 at latest count, about 8.5 million square feet, and my responsibility is real estate, construction, and buy, build, sell, and lease facilities, so as I do it day and night. Related to the map that you have in front of you, and I think it's very descriptive, is you can see the piece of property that we're talking about in orange is in itself is inaccessible, and it's an odd shape, and it's by itself, you know, from a real estate perspective, it would be difficult if impossible to develop. What we would like to do is we develop the site, and our preliminary plans at this point suggests the facilities in the western part or the more the yellow portion. And clearly what we're planning to do, at least in the first phase, is we'll keep that in its entirety as a greenfield site. We think the wetland is an amenity. We want to build a world-class facility similar to some of the other facilities we've built in Minnesota as well as other parts of the world. And we like this additional land as a amenity and as part of our ability to build a, as I said, a world class facility.
Well, any other questions from members? Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Noticing the area of the area in yellow, it says the former Cisco property. I would imagine. I see a little farther to the west of the yellow line that Cisco is, I think that's the correct name, is outside of this particular area. Is it possible to use the area covered partly in the green line? Is that part of your thinking, or is it all in the area between the former Cisco property and the orange property?
Mr. Hagman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the space that's labeled former Cisco property is not part of the equation. It's approximately, I think, 46 acres. It's wooded, and it's heavily wet with wetland, and it would be very, very difficult to develop there. I think Medtronic, as part of the negotiations at this point, is looking to making a very large park dedication fee, and part of that is actually going to go there to perhaps put some trails and utilize that as an amenity for the city as a donation. But under at this point, and I think it would be, in my professional opinion, very, very difficult, and I think the watershed district and the DNR would have some problems of doing anything there from a development standpoint.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Larson renews his motion to have House File 310 passed and be referred to rules. General Register. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Is Representative Westrom here?
That's what I mean.
Can we have a page go get Representative Westrom? Yeah, you got one from Kathy Novak. Okay. I move House file, or Senate file, 1064 to be recommended to pass and to delete everything after an enacting clause and insert the language of House file 1214 and to permanently set aside House file 1214. Okay? That's a motion, right? All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye. Any questions on that motion? All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, now.
Yep.
Now we are waiting for Representative Westrom to present this bill for Chairman Knobloch. And we can go home. You know, we should have talked to that guy. You know, Elbert Lee and Fairmont's got a lot of land. They want to move.
We could move Rent Chronic right to Elbert Lee.
And we could take care of it.
It should be an amendment, I think.
Do they?
Mr. Chair, there are already too many people living up here. They're clogging up all the roads.
Representative Paymar and I are focused on Ford Motor Company later. Yes, I moved some. I'll explain the bill. Where is it somewhere? While we're waiting for Representative Westrom, why don't I take an attempt to explain this bill so we can get this moving. This is a bill that was brought to the legislature to get money for periodicals. Actually, it's for the blind people to have access to local newspapers. And part of it's federally funded, part of it's locally state funded. And I think it is coming out of the TAM money, is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's $4 million in surplus in that funds, and I thought that this would be a very appropriate thing to do. And we have several amendments to that, and if the membership will indulge me, we'll bring forth some of those amendments, and then Representative Westrom can describe his bill kind of backwards like the last bill. Where's the amendments? Right here? A1, whose is that?
The breathing.
Okay. Okay, the A1 amendment is a technical PUC amendment, and A1. Okay. Technical PUC amendment bill additionally clarifies the Department of Commerce's role in assisting and developing of renewable energy against the various parties, and this is one that I have part of, and what the PUC wants to do is they want to eliminate sunsets. If I can find my notes amongst all this pile of stuff, here it is. And Tori's here too. Well, I'm starting the first part of my amendment, Representative Westrum. Subdivision 7 allows a PUC for approval with approval without the need for a commission hearing for filings that meet certain conditions. Subdivision 8 allows the commission to create subcommittees to carry out specific tasks. And Subdivision 9 allows the commission to designate lead commissioners for certain specific tasks. And these are all sunsetting, and we want to renew these provisions. So that's part of the amendment. Then Section 3 is a renewable language. And Representative Westrum, you want to carry on from there?
Mr. Chair, I believe you're on the amendment that's got
A1
language. The language is just one sentence that in the energy bill that's passing in the Senate, they didn't carry it. There's a lot of support to try to pass the Senate bill in the House as is, because there's only two little provisions that really have some meaning but aren't worth going to conference committee over, and so we'd like to pick them up here and at least have them available to pass in the Senate on this bill, and or pick up in a conference committee if we end up there. As you said, it's just language that directs the Department of Commerce and the Renewable Energy Director in efforts as to duties they're supposed to take part in.
Representative Ruth.
Well, Mr. Chair, a technical note. This is to move Senate File 1054, but if I'm wrong, 9 is page 4. But there is page 4.
We amended the House language in the Senate file.
That's the language of the House file. We substituted the House file.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Keller.
Mr. Chair, I know it's late, and I'm really quite concerned right now, because this is not my area of expertise, that's for sure, but the A1 amendment seems to change. So we have, let's just be clear, we've inserted the language of 1214 into Senate file 1064. So we're working off the House file language here, and that bill deals with telecommunications and electronic information services for blind and disabled persons. And now this amendment, A1, is dealing with the renewable energy section of law, as well as we are repealing something that, frankly, at 10 o'clock at night, I need further explanation about. So I hope we have some folks.
What specific questions do you have?
Well, what are we repealing on lines 11 and 12, and why is this the only vehicle for this amendment at this point?
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Maybe House Counsel can help us straighten that out.
Mr. Chair, the repeal is of a sunset, and I believe Beryl Haar from the PUC is here if you want further clarification.
Yes.
And why don't Beryl come forward? It's a sunset of a statute that allows them to set up working groups to look at issues dealing with pertaining to the PUC. Certainly there's other bills that could carry this, but this is a regulated industries bill, and one of the few that are moving right now yet, and that's the reason it matches up here. Representative Simpson's got one on the floor, but that doesn't have a Senate companion right now, and so this is a logical place for
it. Mr. Haar, would you give your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Beryl Haar. I'm the Executive Secretary of the Public Utilities Commission. The language would remove a sunset that provides the commission with authority on operational aspects. It allows the commission to create subcommittees for certain kinds of tasks. It allows the commission to designate lead commissioners to carry out certain specific tasks. It allows the commission to approve certain kinds of filings without having to go through the meeting process, and allows those filings to move through more expeditiously. These are routine, non-controversial kinds of matters that we have a large number of every year, and we handle them through a consent calendar kind of process. So these are all operational in nature, and as far as I know, no one has voiced any opposition to this in any discussions that I've had.
Well, Mr. Chair, I am sorry, but my patience is a bit thin tonight because the chairman came to me yesterday, and this is the chairman's bill. He's not here to present it, but the chairman came to me, came to other members of the committee, asked us, and was very straightforward about what was going to happen on the transportation bill, and I think everything transpired just as we expected. We did not offer any amendments but one that dealt with an individual member's district. I am a bit concerned that at this late hour, we are now seeing amendments to a bill that seems completely out of scope, and no one talked to anyone over here that I know of other than to suddenly dump these amendments out here. So I'm struggling a bit with why we are amending this section into a bill that deals with blind and disabled services right now. I'm sorry I'm being a bit ill-tempered about this, but you know, I thought we kind of had some working agreements tonight, so...
Representative Kelleher, I think I gave this my part of this amendment. This has got two parts to it, at least. But I gave my part pertaining to the PUC to the chairman this afternoon. So I apologize for that lateness. And this does fit in this committee because regulated industry has the PUC under its purview. To this point, Representative Beard.
He's getting a little ahead of us. I'm looking at the 83 amendment, Mr. Chair, and it's also a different subject dealing with, I think, the 911 fee. And I'm wondering how that fits into a bill for the hearing impaired and the blind and hearing impaired. And I mean, I'm a team player here, but Mr. Chair, I think there's a good point raised. That
very good point.
Whose amendments are they?
The part of the A1 amendment was mine. Part of it was Chairman Knobloch's, and part of it was Representative Westrum's.
There's only two parts.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, just a question of the gentleman from the PSC. Usually a sunset is put in a bill for a purpose, and your testimony was that this was rather simple and routine. But why was the sunset originally put in? I found that it was often and not done when the bill may be a little bit controversial, or people might not know what the outcomes might be. Get a little nervous with, I think as Representative Kelleher pointed out, when all of a sudden we see things like feelers and so on, and there's just very limited preparation or testimony.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe the reason for the sunset was that these were deemed to be somewhat experimental in nature, these provisions, and it wasn't. We weren't sure the extent to which they would be used by the Commission to try and expedite its decision making and realize greater efficiencies in its decision making process. And it turns out that the Commission has used all three of those, and currently is using all three of those provisions. Gives the Commission greater flexibility and allows us to handle our workload more effectively. So the Commission would like to continue to be able to do that. Without them, things would be more cumbersome.
You know, I haven't. It's been a number of years since I've been on a committee that dealt with PUC a number of years ago. When you talked about expediting the process, could you tell me a little bit more about what that means?
Mr. Haar.
Mr. Chair, representatives. The Commission has about 2,200 filings every year. A large number of those are very routine, non-controversial types of filings, but they do require Commission action. And in order for the Commission to be able to handle that volume, we have adopted a consent calendar kind of approach, mm-hmm. whereby filings don't have to be held up through the need for the commission to have to meet to bless them, basically. If there's no opposition by any parties, they're reviewed and they're consistent with the statute, the requirements of the law, the matter is approved by operation of law, basically, and it's proven to be very successful. The cases that are controversial or do involve unique features of statute or what have you, those are the cases that the commission spends most of its time on.
So, Mr. Carroll, a post-game and an opportunity for interested parties to come before the commission and let you know if a provision is controversial or not, and it's been over, and so we should typically do for further hearings and discussions.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's right. That's exactly right.
Thank you.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As one of, I think, five or six individuals that sit on regulated industries in this committee, I too raise some concerns. Some of it looks very familiar with the different amendments, and some of it looks like pieces of things that did not get favorable votes in regulated industries. And so for us to be doing it here, I'm concerned about. But I do have a question as it relates to the A1 amendment. I'm interested in knowing currently, just for the record, what the Department of Commerce does as it relates to line 5 to 8 currently under law. Related to this information.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's the Renewable Energy Director's language. Representative Walker, is that what you're referring to?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, yes.
Representative Walker, that position has actually recently been created at the department in the energy bill, and this language will give more specificity. The language the Senate passed will give some specificity. This is language in the House bill that has inadvertently left off the Senate energy bill, and all the parties from the Senate and on down to the interested stakeholders are wanting to try to keep the Senate language intact on the energy bill. And this is a sentence that I said, if we can get it in somewhere else, I think it's more specificity if you have an interest in having the department take a more focused look at helping renewable energy projects and developers. And so that's the reason that language is finding another home if we can get it in. If it doesn't get in, what happens is the department does renewable energy projects direction in the direction that they're thinking about, but we don't have as much say in what we really want them to do to help developers. So, I mean, the language can come out if you want to.
Mr. Chair,
leave more wiggle room.
Is that why?
It's in the House energy bill right now that if the plan of the Senate language is staying intact, goes forward, that language will come out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, with the new position being what it is, I'm pretty sure the individuals are moving forward. When I read this language, it doesn't say anything specific to me. It just gives some, it's very broad and general. It's not giving any direction. I'm pretty sure that the new position is already assisting individuals, the regulators, the utilities, and things of that nature. It's the individuals that are having, either that are directly involved in creating the renewable energies or those that are benefiting as consumers. And so with this language being as it is, I don't see anything specific. I'm not quite sure why we would be doing it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, this is in the House bill right now. That's the 1344. Also, the Senate language prevails. If you think this isn't specific,
mm-hmm.
the Senate language is a lot less specific.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, where is the House file 1344?
That's
in this committee?
On this committee, coming up on the agenda when the agenda clears out.
According to the committee administrators, going to have a hearing next week.
Yes, sir. No.
Mr. Chair. Representative Bradley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there's a lot of us sort of sitting here scratching our heads because I don't have a clue what's in front of me. So I'm sorry if that's pretty
probably
correct.
My fault.
But let me see if I can help a little bit. Are these all elements of bills that have gone through committee hearings, have been recommended by, I don't sit on regulated interest industry, but it would be helpful, I think, if this committee could know that what you're constructing here are completely language that's already has been reviewed and approved by committees. Is that the case or not?
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, this language is, as I said, in the 1344 bill that's sitting here in this committee. It's going to be stripped out when we do a delete all amendment that takes the Senate language. The Senate didn't not accept it because there was problems. It was just in a whatever 30 or 40 page bill or whatever it is. They just missed this language, and it's language that I thought had some value in it, and but it, you know, it's not to die for, if you will. But it does. They also dropped the sunset repealer. That's in the House language as well. So this one has it. Some of the other amendments have provisions that passed committee, and for bigger reasons than the issues that are in the amendments, the bill died, and therefore some of them are being picked up along the way.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bradley.
I'm thinking, Mr. Chair, I was trying to help Representative Westrom. I got partway there, but I'm not sure I got all the way there. So I guess I'm sensing, maybe if you said the A1. The A1, that apparently is language.
The A1 is language that's in this committee on the third.
And that has passed
the committee.
That is helpful and comforting. Then maybe my next question, let me just assume that most of it is that. Then why? Why tonight again, and why on this particular bill?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, this is a regulated industries bill, and so there's a connection. There's not very many regulated industries bills out there. There's another one Representative Simpson has on the floor that's going nowhere, or needs to go nowhere, likely would go nowhere because the Senate bill is still sitting in committee. And so this was a logical vehicle to pick up some regulated industries provisions that's still alive and will meet up with the Senate bill.
I'm pondering, Mr. Chair. Move on.
Okay, Representative Guinea.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I look at this fairly general language and see that the Department of Commerce is taking on a huge task here. It may be general language, but it's a huge task. And it seems to me there should be a fiscal note. This is the Finance Committee, and I think a fiscal note, the appropriate fiscal note, might answer the questions that people are trying to grapple with here. What is the Commerce Department going to be doing, and what's the fiscal note on it? And I think that's probably why people here are saying what's going on, because we're used to a fiscal note which will tell us why this is in here, and there's no fiscal note. I mean, what is this going to cost the state for the Department of Commerce to take on this duty that obviously you have to put in the language in here because they're taking on something new and big? Otherwise, we wouldn't put it in the bill. So is there a fiscal note that's coming along? It's missing? What?
Mr. Chair.
Representative West.
There's no fiscal note. Representative Reginius, this is a position the department has shuffled duties and is creating, whether we have a say in how we want them to help create it or not. They will create it their own style, their own way, without the clear, well, the broad definition here, broad language here, but without any of this language. So,
Representative Westrom, I think since we have your information in House File 1344, and because every time we do ask a department to do something, it has a cost to it, And seeing no fiscal note on this, I'm kind of reluctant to have this part pass through this committee. And in this amendment, we have some provisions for the PUC members. I'll leave it up to you. Do you want to vote on those PUC provisions and delete this portion, or do you want to delete the whole amendment?
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Representative Kelleher.
I think, generally speaking, members on our side of the aisle, and I think there are probably members on your side of the aisle as well, who are very nervous about moving forward with this particular amendment tonight on this particular bill, a bill that's very important to the communities with disabilities. And so, you know, I'm trying to be gentle here. I feel like this is a great bridge amendment for this to become something completely different. And I'm not comfortable voting on this amendment tonight. I wish it would be withdrawn and we could all work together to figure out what really is going on here. It feels quite out of the ordinary. I mean, we have a lot of things that happen in this committee, but this does not feel quite right.
Very well. Representative Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, you're suggesting that deleting the one, keeping the PUC language would probably be my first preference, but you're the chair. You make the call.
I think the membership is pretty much indicated they like the whole amendment withdrawn, and perhaps we can add the PUC provisions in the 1344 when that's heard. So Representative Westrom withdraws.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not a member of this committee,
okay.
So...
I withdraw this amendment. Thank you. The A2 amendment. Who's got that?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, that's Representative...
Mr. Chair, I'm just sitting in for the author of the bill, remember?
I appreciate that very much.
And Representative Westrom, you look great. Mr. Chair?
Representative...
I'd like
Holbrook.
To move approval of the A2 amendment, and I'll start with the part that I'm most familiar with, which would begin on page 1, line 13, and it's related to wireless phone directories. This is an issue that both myself and Representative Stephen worked on, and you've seen or heard of the news reports. And concerns relative to wireless phone directories. This would require an opt-in and a process for that, and a remedy if a wireless phone company were to release an individual's wireless phone number without their authorization. First part of the bill, it's presented has to do with collecting a fee for accessing an electronic information service. My understanding is that this dial-in news service allows access to a number, dozens of newspapers and publications, and Representative Westrom, of course, will probably have the exact number, and this fee would help cover the cost of administering that program.
Very well. Questions from members of Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and staff, just a quick question. Is this amendment divisible on page 1 at lines between lines 12 and 13?
Yeah,
it will be. Yes?
Mr. Chair?
No way.
Mr. Chair, it seems to be divisible between lines 12 and 13.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Biskins.
Mr. Chair, I move to divide the amendment.
Very well.
And I would like to vote on the second part first.
Okay. Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, I have questions. Of course, this expands the scope of the bill once again greatly in terms of the content, although I think it's more clear why Representative Holbrook might be trying to amend that portion, the wireless portion, tonight. I have questions about the fee portion, so do you want me to hold that question until we're voting on that section of the amendment?
I think that would be very appropriate.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, if I might.
Representative Holbrook.
To the second part, I failed to add in explaining this, is that we work from representatives of the industry and Mr. Neumeister, and came to a pretty much general consensus. Mr. Neumeister wanted an ability to opt in with, on a piece of paper, a written form, and that was something that the industry couldn't accommodate, but my recollection is that that was the only controversy with the bill that wasn't resolved.
Very well. Beer. Representative Beer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Representative Westrum, you're the chair and I'm the vice chair of Reg Industries. It seems that the second part of this bill was our rather modest telecommunications bill that we attempted to pass out of Reg Industries this year, which I personally voted for and thought was a good idea. However, it seems like when we were about to take a vote, some bad karma blew through the room. And some in a really strange event, it failed for some reason or another. And so here it is again. I still think it was a good idea. But I guess what I'm gathering is that House Bill 1214 is becoming a horse to ride, and we're saddling it up with these things. Is that what I'm gathering? Because I know the Senate has no telecommunications language.
Well,
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, this is a provision that, as you remember, didn't have, this provision wasn't controversial in the bill that it failed in.
Yeah, that's why it was so odd, because it was a controversial bill.
And so, yes, this is a, as I said earlier, this is one of the few regulated industries bills that can pick up some of the non-controversial pieces, and that's one of the reasons that makes sense to add this on to the bill tonight. And dividing the amendment to Representative Biskins has got the other part, Mr. Chair, will raise some controversy or questions, and so I think that have questions just on that later is fine, or pass this and do whatever with the other piece if members want. People have come to me and asked if there's ways to get things done, and this is one of the bills that can do it.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, this is just a follow-up, maybe a comment or advice to the chair, and you are the chair, but we've got good folks in here that have come down to hear House Bill 1012 passed tonight. And I would, we've got another bill coming up early next week that was a Reg Industries bill. We could put these in.
Absolutely.
We're going to sit here and talk for another hour. I know how we love to talk.
No, we do.
And so rather than do that, my advice to chair is that we just vote these down or we lay them over, because I don't want them on record as being killed if we're going to bring them up on 1344 next week.
Right now we have the motion to divide the two. And okay,
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Biskins.
Mr. Chairman, I withdraw my motion and yield to Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to lay the A2 amendment on the table.
Very well. A2 amendment withdraw it. And
I think we should have voted on the first.
I will withdraw the A3 amendment. Now we're back to the bill.
It's a good deal, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Very well.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Representative Westrum, do you want to describe what's left of the bill?
Mr. Chair, I think the longer I talk, the less votes this bill is going to get. So this bill will change the appropriations that we take out of the TAM fund in Minnesota by allowing $100,000 to now go to State Services for the Blind to contract for services for a dial-in news and a news line system that the two, when you combine the two together, the news line dial-in, the news line system allows blind persons to call into an 800 number and access about 150 newspapers throughout the state, including, I believe, the Minneapolis Star Tribune and I don't remember if Pioneer Press is on it or not, but there's several even Midwest Minnesota newspapers on it. Dial-In News currently provides some of that service. That will probably be pared back and still offer the obituaries, local coupon
obituaries,
promotions for groceries, et cetera, et cetera. And the $100,000 will... It's capped at $100,000 expenditure. Right now, the expenditure expects to be probably about $50,000 to $65,000 a year. The second part of this will allow $300,000 out of the TAM fund. TAM fund is what is collected on your phone bill to go to pay for the technology to allow the phones to be able to be used by deaf and hard of hearing folks. This $300,000 that will come out of this fund now will go to help subsidize and pay for the cost of closed captioning on rural television stations throughout the state, Duluth, Rochester, Alexandria, Mankato. Those are the types of rural stations that will then have closed captioning. There's a sunset of on this expenditure to be reviewed in 5 years, and that's, I think, Mr. Chair, about the bill.
Okay, first we have Representative Carlson.
I was before you approve your amendment.
Okay. Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a quick question. The $300,000 that you were just talking about, Representative Westrum, is that what's supposed to fund the Commissioner of Human Services grant agreements?
Representative?
Because there's grant agreements in here. It's saying that Human Services Commission must enter into grant agreements with television stations.
That's where the money comes from, is out of the telephone TAM fund that currently has about a $4 million surplus in it, but and currently is primarily used for just paying for the cost of making it accessible for deaf and hard of hearing folks to use the phone.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Sikora, you're done. Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrum, I just want to talk about one piece that's actually not in the bill. I think this is a good bill that Representative Knobloch has, and thank you for presenting it tonight. In the A2 amendment, there was some lines 5 through 12 that would have imposed an annual fee on this to eligible individuals. And my understanding of this is that because of the agreement with the newspapers who are providing the content for this talking newspaper service or periodical service, that this would render the contract of that ineffective. And so I just want to have a little tiny testimony here in Ways and Means, because I am worried, because the amendment was withdrawn and we never got to talk about it, that if the amendment comes up on the House floor, I want you all to be witnesses to the testimony so that we all understand what the consequences of that might be.
Okay.
So if there's someone who could come to testify to that point.
Yeah, Representative Holmberg.
And thank you. And Mr. Chair, also maybe what if we can ask the stand-in bill author how this fee relates to the base bill, and will there be less services for individuals if we don't have a fee, or where was this money going to go? Why did we need the fee, and are we going to have less service as a result? I mean, the $72 a year, while nobody wants to charge a fee, and I'm looking at I knew there was a bunch of newspapers that you had access to. I mean, I know I pay well over that for one subscription to one newspaper in my home. So to me, it doesn't seem like an outrageous fee if there's a need to cover the cost for a service, if it's at risk of being cut back or whatever.
I think we'll listen to the testifier first, and then we'll listen to Representative Westrum's reason for having a fee. Please give your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chuck Hamilton. I'm the Director of Minnesota State Services for the Blind, a program of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Good evening. It's a late one. I'll try to be brief. This issue did come up during committees. There was a proposal that had been discussed about fees, et cetera. I did do some research and did provide an email, which it's three paragraphs. You want to bear with me, it probably says what you need to hear. This is from the National Federation of the Blind in Baltimore. It says, Mr. Hamilton, you asked if you could charge a subscription fee for NFB Newsline. All of our newspaper contracts contain a clause which prohibits either the National Federation of the Blind or any of our individual state sponsors from charging the eligible users a subscription fee. Excuse me. We have over 160 newspapers on the system, and it typically takes from 2 to 6 months to execute these contracts and get the newspaper up and working on NFB Newsline. These contracts are not complicated, and the technical work does not take that long, but each newspaper must process our request with all of their other work. It has taken us 10 years to get to where we are today. We have no plans and no mechanisms for billing an eligible user. If there was a way to bill an eligible user, then a newspaper would most likely want some portion of the fee. It is simply not feasible to imagine that we could renegotiate all of our newspaper contracts in order to change this policy. Furthermore, we have 37 other states that are offering this service free of charge to each eligible user. If you were to charge a subscription fee, we would not be able to offer NFB Newsline in Minnesota. It was signed John G. Perret, Director of Sponsored Technology Outreach, National Federation of the Blind.
Very well. Representative Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that's just part of the story. I will be brief. This was not my amendment. It wasn't my amendment in regulated industries. It wasn't originated because of my doings today. Members had did have some interest in this and asked staff to do this. But I had brought this language forward in regulated industries. This was modified language after the testimony you just heard was brought to our committee, and this amendment, as you see, would not be subscription fee for the newspapers, but an administration fee for the cost of providing the service and the dial-in news, which is a separate service SSB currently provides. And so there's no sense debating at length this issue because it's not even in front of us. I talked to the groups and told them I wasn't going to be carrying this amendment forward in the committee anymore this year, but I do know there's some that still might have an interest in it, and if that debate comes forward, I'm willing to discuss it further with people. But right now, I think this bill has a pretty broad support, and Representative Keller, I'd be happy to visit with you further, but I don't believe this amendment, if it were to go on, would match the testimony or be in direct conflict with what the testimony says. SSB does charge $6 a month right now for the dial-in news to cover some of the costs. That is going to go away and will be picked up by the TAM funds as well. And I think that's probably enough, Mr. Chair.
Representative Keller, you got a follow-up?
Well, Mr. Chair, and the reason that I ask is that I saw the amendment. I know that this bill is probably going to the General Register. And when we do that, we don't have the opportunity to hear from any outside members of the public, like the Director of the State Services for the Blind. So I thought it was important tonight for members to hear that testimony and have that be brief, so that if we have this faceless on the floor, that we at least have a base of knowledge to begin to even discuss this issue out on the House floor.
Sure, and that makes sense, Representative Keller.
Okay, Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, I think I have the information that I need at this point, and Representative Westrom's right, the A2 amendment isn't in front of us, and I'm not so sure I completely understand the $6 they're paying now and that going away, and maybe this is an equal amount for access to something, not exactly a subscription, but I think given the body language around the table that the Western, of course, can't see, I'm not going to offer the A2 amendment this evening. I think that if, in fact, this language needs to be moved, maybe the bill that was referred to that's coming to the committee next week that deals with utilities, et cetera, may be a place to bring it back up when Representative Knobloch is here and it's not 10:30 at night. And
Any other questions on the bill? Seeing none, I renew my motion to have House File 12, Senate File. Senate File 1064,
as amended,
be sent to the floor.
Yeah, we amended the House language.
The House language into the Senate File.
All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Pose same sign. We are adjourned. Thank you.